Imagine a world where forming policy was less about cutting through red tape and more about listening to people for building a better tomorrow. Two of the most widely discussed issues facing our society today center around climate and economic inequality. While many people are divided on these issues, there are a variety of ideas involving how they should be handled. We were curious to know what the younger generation thought about these topics. So in May 2021, we brought together more than 600 young people from across the country, some students, some non-students, some just out of high school, others closer to their 30th birthdays. They were all brought together online to discuss their insights on these issues in small groups. They then listened to panels of experts that answered their questions and interacted with each other regardless of whether they agreed on the topics being discussed. From the team that brought you Voices of America in One Room, this is Voices of Shaping Our Future.
My name is Alice. I'm the Associate Director at the Center for Deliberative Democracy at Stanford University.
In this episode of Voices of Shaping Our Future, we had the pleasure of talking with Tanner and Isabel, a current college student and a college graduate who both attended the Shaping Our Future event in May. Despite being on opposite sides of the country, the two share similar outlooks on many of the issues that were discussed during the two-day event. Tanner is a senior at Center College in Kentucky who's currently studying physics. Originally from Nashville, Tennessee, he runs track in addition to being a full-time student and is looking ahead to continuing his studies and earning an advanced degree and anticipates a career in STEM following his education. Isabel is a 27-year-old marketing manager currently working for an essential services nonprofit organization in the Seattle area. Originally from Santa Cruz, California, she moved farther north for college, where she attended Seattle University while studying communications and French. Let's meet Tanner and Isabel and learn more about their thoughts following the Shaping Our Future virtual experience. We begin our discussion with Isabel. Here are her thoughts on electoral reform and her group's reluctance with ranked choice voting, the importance of engaging in conversations with each other, in the idea of national service. Thank you so much, Isabel. I'm so excited to hear about your experience from Shaping Our Future and see what it was like to talk to a group of strangers for a weekend. Why did you decide to attend Shaping Our Future? What did it for you that you decided to log in that weekend?
When I saw the opportunity for the Shaping Our Future two-day event, I was initially really drawn to it because I really liked the idea of being able to hear opinions from other young people in real time versus, you know, reading them maybe months later down the road in like an article, you know, from like the New York Times or something like that, because I do feel like I read these articles frequently, whether it's, you know, Washington Post or another kind of big news source where a lot of young people in my kind of age range are quoted about these big topics and issues. And I always kind of wonder, well, I want to hear from those people directly. Like, I would love to actually engage in a conversation with them, in addition to hearing from them in this one piece.
I would love to get into the first day's discussion. And I believe that first day was about ranked choice voting, national popular vote, and just an overall general discussion about electoral reform. And I wonder what your group had to say about that, just because it's not something we really talk about every day. And I wonder what your peers thought about these topics.
Yeah, it's definitely not something that is talked about every day. And I think for me, I definitely learned more about especially ranked choice voting through that specific discussion. The kind of, I think, hot topic of that part of it was the Electoral College reform. And so that was something that really everyone definitely agreed on. And I think it was interesting to just see how quickly everyone came to a consensus about, like, yes, something needs to change with the Electoral College. With ranked choice voting, there was more of an exploration together that I think people kind of were less informed about ranked choice voting. Once we kind of started getting more into those details is when people expressed some hesitancy for how could this become a real thing.
And where was that hesitancy coming from, if you remember? Was it what some of the things I've heard was that it's complicated and some people feel like there's reluctance to try something new on. And then on the other hand, other types of hesitancy could be from the just the maybe the types of candidates that would emerge or the types of people that would emerge from this new method of voting. So I wonder for your group where the hesitancy may have come from.
Yeah, I think it was that exactly what you just said of like the who would emerge from there. And I think it's also like when there's this shiny new idea, it sounds good at first. And then once you kind of start talking about it and getting more into the weeds on things, I think people are beginning to realize, oh, there's a lot of unknowns here. There's a lot of, there's just a lot of things we aren't sure of. So I think it tends to kind of be like, once you start looking at the unknowns and something that doesn't feel so familiar, then that's when some of those questions arise. And I think it still was, everyone was still in favor of that reform that needs to happen. But there was definitely, by the end of the conversation, like a bit more of a curiosity, I think, to know more about it.
For yourself, Isabel, having heard your group and their sentiment about just the need for a change, is there a path forward you feel like would be most viable or could be most successful? I know that there's no one perfect path or there's not a solution that will solve all the problems. How do you feel like you would interpret the right path forward?
You know, it was definitely something where, like, this was a topic that I thought was really helpful to hear from my peers about, because it's something that feels really overwhelming at times. So I think for me, it's the path forward is less clear just because I'm less kind of, I guess, close to this as a topic. And so it was something that where I was just, you know, I liked observing and hearing what other people thought about it. I think definitely it does seem like the first step is just to have these conversations about it and just to actually discuss like what it would mean. I think there's a lot of assumptions that are made that have to be, you know, kind of talked about in greater detail. So I think that's really the value of these conversations, because that way everything can be out on the table. So I think really the path forward, I mean, I know some states have already adopted ranked choice voting, I believe. And so, for example, that was something that people didn't really know. Like, people didn't really know that some states have even adopted ranked choice voting. So then to be able to then talk about it and say, well, how has that experience been like for those states? Has it been overall like pretty positive? Could this be a model for like the country as a whole? And so I think then you just learn more about these topics and then you get to actually kind of have a better understanding of them. So I don't know if that answer makes sense, but I guess just engaging in these conversations is the first step in my mind.
I'd love to move on to the second day. And there are two topics. One was about the Civilian Climate Corps. And with your peers, I don't know if national service or this concept of public service in this manner was something that your peers thought about, really, because I think a lot of folks may not have heard of
serving in this way. And I'm curious to know what your group thought in terms of whether they thought it was a good idea or whether they kind of were not really sure about what it means to do national service.
Yeah, so this was probably my favorite of the topics, just because, you know, we were just talking about the heat wave and it's just right there in your face all the time. And I think it was very fascinating to see how people responded to the question, depending on where they lived in the country, because, you know, people in different states have different experiences with the reality of climate change. So everyone was very in favor of the idea of a climate conservation corps. I think the thinking of it as a mandatory thing really turned people off. And, you know, it's that just kind of floating that idea seemed like it was definitely not something that people liked, because I think anytime there's a mandatory something of having to join this climate corps, I think that people just kind of maybe it brings to mind like a draft or something like that, and just having to participate in something where they didn't get a choice. One question was, well, would the Climate Conservation Corps pay a living wage? Because with AmeriCorps, one of the critiques of AmeriCorps a lot is that the people who participate in it can't really make a living wage, or they you know, it's barely, like, they barely are able to. And so that hadn't occurred to me before. And so that was really fascinating to hear from some folks about just that concern.
They're right. I think the most recent numbers were, I think they get some kind of wage of like 15,000 or something like that annually. And I think it may increase if you do another year, but I mean, I think maybe they get a living stipend. I'm not sure. But no matter how you slice it, it's not very much. And of course, depending on where you get placed, that could mean very well nothing if you have to rent and just basic needs may not even be met.
Like a place like here in Seattle, I mean, the cost of living here is really high. And just with renting, there's just, I mean, it's just like, it's just tough. And I think it's sounds like it's hard to make ends meet sometimes. And so there was a feeling of, well, it would be great to figure these things out before something like the Climate Conservation Corps is launched.
I'm really glad your group had an opportunity to talk about those points. Talking about it and verbalizing the need to have a more holistic view of like who gets to contribute and who's actually participating. Those are really big questions that I think we often forget. Now, with the remaining time, I'd love to shift to the last topic about economic inequality, of which I think minimum wage and universal basic income were probably pretty hot topics. And given your day-to-day job, actually, I wonder whether you encounter, you know, people and or, you know, have like really stories and anecdotes of that you shared with the group on these issues.
Yeah, I did. And I think that right now with COVID, I mean, that has exacerbated an already really bleak in some cases, you know, kind of picture of minimum wage in our country, especially in cities where it's just already the cost of living is really high. And so for us at my organization, we give out lots of financial assistance to prevent people from being evicted, to prevent them from falling behind on their rent and utilities. And if they're making minimum wage, and then, you know, with COVID, we saw a lot of job loss, you know, if there's like they're one paycheck away from becoming from experiencing homelessness, or their partner loses their job. So there's a lot of like room for difficult things to happen when there's not a safety net. And when, especially if you can't call up your family member and ask if they can help or if they can provide a place for you to live. And so I think what we see a lot at my organization is just like, even when people do have a job and it pays minimum wage, there's enough for rent, but not enough for food. Or there's enough for food, but then there's not quite enough for rent. And so then it's like something has to give. And so that's one thing that, you know, we did talk about in my group, because, you know, some people have had experiences growing up in poverty, or, you know, others had had experiences during COVID specifically about economic challenges, job loss, that kind of thing. So it was really interesting to hear these different kind of opinions and thoughts based on like personal and lived experience. And so as a result of that, people were very much interested in the idea of universal basic income, because it definitely feels like it would, you know, bring everyone up to a place where there wouldn't be this kind of having to decide between, you know, do I pay rent this month? Do I buy groceries this week? Like trying to figure out that either or.
I really appreciate you sharing that. And I would love to hear whether your group talked about broadly economic inequality, or just what you think, actually. Given your day job and the probably lots of different stories and incidents that you hear about, having lived in Seattle and in the Bay Area, I'm interested in learning about how you interpret the term economic inequality. We all interpret it differently because we have different lived experiences. And because of that, I feel that we all see these policies, these economic policies differently. But I wonder what this term means to you, economic inequality, and how do you interpret this term?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think like last year, I listened to this talk and I can't remember exactly where I heard it, but it was basically about the terms equality and equity and how they are different, and how equality implies that you're on kind of the same playing field, or it basically means that everyone has the same chance in life. But that doesn't really take into account that if you're starting 10 steps behind someone else based on circumstances out of your control and circumstances that you just were born into, then you're going to be constantly playing catch up to try to get to where that other person is. So that definitely is unequal. And I think that also it's not equitable either. And I think that as a country, what I would love to see is economic, you know, equity, and just that everyone has what they need to succeed economically. So, I mean, it's like not so much that everyone is given $1,000 a month, maybe, but that the people who are actually really needing it, that they have what they need to succeed in life and to be in a place where they're stable and secure. So, I mean, that to me, I guess, is how I view it, and what I think that we as a country should strive for is trying to find that equity and get away from this, you know, really, really huge gaps between different states, between different communities that are just so stark.
Isabel, we're quickly running out of time. I wonder what advice perhaps you would have for those that are listening and that didn't have the opportunity to have these deliberations. How could they try to go out and talk about these issues?
Yeah, it's definitely something I'm still learning how to do also. But I think the first thing is just keeping an open mind and remembering that, you know, your lived experience is different from other people's and theirs is different from yours. And so, you know, once you go into a conversation, maybe remembering that, I think that it just, you're already going to be, you know, in a lot better place to understand what the other person has to say. And I mean, also, I think just not assuming that you know all there is to know on a certain topic. There were a lot of people in the group who we were kind of learning together, and it was nice because I think there was a little bit of nervousness at the beginning because people felt like that they had to have all the right answers to the questions and that they had to kind of be these experts. But it became clear within the first, you know, couple of minutes that there were a lot of varying levels of like knowledge and familiarity with the topics that were being talked about. And so I think just kind of coming at it from that and just knowing like, hey, you know, let's talk about this together, you know, not trying to know all that there is to know about something. And so, yeah, I mean, and then I think also just the consistency is important too, just talking about these things on a regular basis, because sometimes it can be a little bit easy to forget how to have a conversation about heavy topics with people who you might not normally talk to. And so I guess it's just maybe like an exercise where you're just like trying to do it often so that you kind of keep that that familiarity sharp, you know, of how to engage in a conversation.
Well, Isabel, thank you so much for taking time to talk to us today. I really appreciate you not only sharing what your group was like, your experience, but sharing about you and what your life has been like and just how your work and has impacted different people in your community and talking about the different policies that we should all be thinking about. Thank you again for your time.
Thank you for having me.
We end our discussion with Tanner. Here are his thoughts on the concept behind Shaping Our Future and why he participated in our event, his opinion on climate change and national service, and what economic inequality means to him. Thank you so much for joining today, Tanner. I'm so excited to talk to you about your experience at Shaping Our Future. And I would love to dive in to the weekend that you participated in. And the first question I'd love to ask you is, what made you decide to attend Shaping Our Future and spend the whole weekend with some strangers talking about policy issues?
So the first time we talked, I said that it definitely didn't have anything to do with the compensation that they provided. but they did give us a little bit of money for our time. But the interesting part was that it really seemed like a novel idea, something that I'd never really heard about before, you know, just taking what hundreds of kids from dozens of institutions across the United States and have us, you know, deliberate about these ideas in a civil format, which was really interesting to me. So that's really what got me interested in it, is because it just seemed like something that I didn't know if it had ever been done before. And I know they said it was like the largest event of its kind. I was like, yeah, I want to be a part of that, you know, give my input. So
that is true. It is definitely largest. I mean, I haven't seen anything else reaching up to several hundred people in this age cohort nationally speaking. I'm curious now, you've been in undergrad for a few years now. What are your classes like? You know, are they more seminar style or lecture style? I guess for physics or STEM majors, it's a bit different. And wondering how the discussions you had for the weekend differed from your normal everyday classes.
Yeah, so being a physics major, I guess, a high-level physics major at this point, going into my senior year, most of my classes are labs, at least the classes that pertain to the physics major, you know, a few gen eds and electives here and there. But in the physics lab, a lot of the time we're working with a lab partner, you know, maybe just one or two other people working on, all right, we've got this experiment that we need to do. How do we figure it out? You know, what steps do we need to take? In contrast, I'd say that the Shaping Our Future weekend was, it was definitely a larger group than what I'm typically used to. You know, maybe about a dozen or so kids or young adults in one group chat, speaking and deliberating about things. So it was a little bit different in there. So there was much more opinions. And I'd say that's one thing, you know, typically when you're doing, you know, a physics lab or, you know, a biology lab or whatever, I mean, it's pretty straightforward and objective what you need to do. But this was more open-ended and more subjective and just, you know, giving, you know, input and thoughts about things rather than, you know, just, oh, here's, you know, numbers that you need to crunch or whatever.
You make a really good point, Tanner. In science, there's often a correct answer. And in this case, there definitely are not correct answers. There are a spectrum of opinions. Now I want to probe into where your groups had disagreement. Where were there points where the discussions were a bit more heated or the lines to talk were a bit longer than others?
Yeah, so the number one thing that comes to my head is we were speaking about, you know, the electoral system in America, possible changes that could be made to that. And at the very end, our question was, well, do you have any, you know, input on what you think could be done, you know, to help, you know, other than maybe the things that were listed? And there was one individual, he just seemed, he was dead struck on, we just need to educate people more. And he was pretty broad with that. So, you know, some people chimed in and say, well, what exactly do you mean by educate? Are you talking about the educational system in school? Are you talking about, you know, from a young age up? Are you talking about outreach to voting age individuals? What exactly do you mean by that? And then, you know, maybe he would come back with, oh, this is what I mean by that. And then maybe another person, you know, they'd wait in the line and they say, I actually don't think you can just, you know, necessarily just say, oh, well, it's only up to the people. Maybe, you know, the government needs to have more say in this. You can't just blame it on the voters themselves when it's the system, you know, things like that.
I'm sure it was difficult sometimes to have these conversations because it's hard to know, you know, sometimes where people are coming from in terms of their opinions. But in listening to your group's discussion, I'm curious to know, did it affect your views about the Electoral College or how, you know, how in general our country votes?
I can say that a common theme that I could say we could almost all agree upon in my group, at least in my personal experience that weekend, was that it almost seems unacceptable for someone who doesn't have the popular vote to win the presidency or really any other you know, office. That just seems, you know, off. That just seems a little odd, like that wasn't necessarily intended. And I think, you know, ranked choice and some of the other options would definitely fix that. So I think a lot of us, if I remember right, this is a little while ago, a lot of us think that, or thought at least at the time, that some changes probably need to be made, that there definitely are some flaws in our current system of election. And that I think some of the proposed systems would definitely be a step forward in the right direction.
You also talked about the Climate National Service. And now I'm curious about what your opinion is in terms of the proposals that were discussed on having a national service that's focused on climate issues. What do you think? I mean, since you yourself, you know, are considering a career potentially or a job down that path, were you or was your group supportive of having this specific national service offering?
Yeah, that was, if I remember right, a point of contention. Personally, I think that would be, you know, a great idea, but, you know, there are a lot of people there were some people who were saying, well, you know, that's going to take a lot of tax dollars. And, you know, there are other places where that money could better be spent rather than it being a federal program. But I certainly think that, you know, we as, you know, if we consider ourselves, you know, the best nation in the country, you know, I think we really need to, you know, to act like it. We need to take care of the world that we live in. I think I said the best nation in the country, didn't I? I messed up there. We're the best nation in the world, we consider ourselves. But yeah, I'd say there will be no world if we don't take care of it. If we're the largest, one of the largest economies, and we've got this huge population, we need to be taking care of it. And I feel like just taking steps towards actually, you know, doing that and, you know, providing a world and a landscape that is healthy and that is safe for generations after us is paramount.
I think what you just, your last phrase, last sentence that you just said, preparing the country or the globe for the generations after us is something that I feel like is hard for many of us to grasp. Because we're always thinking of the now, and it's hard to plan for the future. I want to follow up on the points on the economic inequality proposals now. What, broadly speaking, instead of talking about the specific proposals, what does economic inequality really mean to you? And I'm kind of thinking about whether you want to take it from the angle of, you know, your coursework in STEM, or as you're looking to, you know, go out into the real world and find a job, I wonder how you're thinking about that phrase, economic inequality.
Yeah. First thing that comes to mind is me is that some people are just born with a leg up, and some people are born into tougher situations. And, you know, of course, there's always going to be deviation from that. You know, not everyone can live the exact same life. But the thing, at least in our economy, is that having money makes money. The more money you have, the more money you make, you know, especially with options that you have with, you know, stocks and whatnot. And just the rich just get richer and the poor just get poorer. And I think that it, you know, people who, like I said, may be born into tough situations, it almost seems like the odds are even more stacked against them. And I can say that, you know, kind of out of experience. You know, I was born into a fairly, you know, not ideal situation. You know, it's just me and my mom. And, you know, just personally, like I've seen in my, you know, 21 years of life, at least from what I can remember, how hard my mom had to work just to go from food stamps and, you know, living paycheck to paycheck to being fairly comfortable and actually being able to put money into savings and whatnot. And what you have to do to be able to do that, you know, when you're working multiple minimum wage jobs, like $7 an hour, is the odds, you know, for a lot of people, unfortunately, are almost insurmountable. While at the same time, you know, there are people born into luxury yachts and whatnot. And nothing against those people, because they came about their money somewhere along the line, you know, probably worked very hard for that. But I think that it is important, you know, at least, you know, to fix the system in a way that evens the playing field and gives better opportunities to move across wealth classes. And I feel like there are definitely barriers there. And it's, I don't have, you know, obviously the information right in front of me, but I read somewhere that the people who are poor tend to stay poor. The people who are rich tend to stay rich, and there's very little movement even in our economy across socioeconomic classes. And I think that, you know, our government does have some responsibility to, you know, to help out with that.
Wow. That was really well said. And first, Tanner, I'm so thankful and so grateful that you shared personal stories about you and your mom and just how things have been and how far your family has come. It's reality, really, for many people. And what you said with respect to just the rich getting richer, I think there are just a number of news articles and research being done about the companies and billionaires that are profiting off of the pandemic in number of ways that are just unimaginable for many of us. And it is hard to really think about, these issues while there are a number of people struggling still. Now getting into specifics, I'd love to know from what you said just now, do you think having a universal basic income would be helpful? I mean, I know that there are pros and cons in having a UBI, but I wonder, does that help in any way, or would it be more hurtful?
I think it would definitely help some groups more than others. And for some groups that, that can be life-changing, and at the same time for some groups that would just be more money that they kind of just put in their savings account and never really touch. So I think that if something like that were to be implemented, it would have to be very tactical and what that threshold would be. I think that every person, like I said, if we are to consider ourselves the best country in the world, I feel like every person has the right to at least afford shelter and food and be able to clean themselves and, practice hygiene. And I feel that, below a certain threshold where, you're not being able to do that, I feel like it might, at the very least, I think it's worth experimenting with. And I know a lot of other countries, smaller countries are trying out with that. So I feel like, I definitely think that thought should at least be put into it. If it doesn't work, then it doesn't work, but at least you tried,
Yes. Yeah. You make really good points. And you've been so honest, and I want to be devil's advocate, and I want to challenge you in a way to say, what would you say to those that argue that UBIs would not have much benefit? You can't. One of the most popular arguments against it is that you don't know what people use the money for. And some people just waste it away on, entertainment or drugs or whatever, what have you. Just they make the point that they would just be not using it for rent or what people would want them to use it for. And I wonder what you would say to that. How would you convince the other side that we need to give some people an opportunity?
Yeah, I'd say that this is actually kind of a double-edged sword, I guess, because we do live in a free nation, and I guess whatever money you get, how you spend it is your prerogative. you can spend it however much you want on whatever you want, I guess, technically, but, at the end of the day, if people were abusing that and not really spending it on things that are important, then that could be a valid, defense on why maybe we shouldn't do it. But I would definitely say that that's almost a worst case scenario type thing. Like, a lot of, when you're working with these people and you actually see, the individuals and kind of what they're going through and how hard they have to work. And like, it's almost like you have to, these are real people. They're not just, entities, on a paper, and you say, oh, well, if you give this person more money, then they're not going to spend it right or something like that. When you actually get to put a face on a lot of people, you start to realize that, yeah, there are bad bad apples in the bunch who, you know, unfortunately, you know, wouldn't do riot. But I like to think, and maybe maybe I'm just optimistic, I like to think that, you know, we as Americans are a better people than that. And I'd say that the vast majority of people are intelligent enough and hardworking enough and you know, good enough people and just are independent enough to be able to mm-hmm. make their own decisions and make good decisions. I don't want to say we should not do this program, which would help many, many people, because there would be some bad people that would kind of, that money would go to waste. No, I like to think that, you know, we as a people would do right by that, and that the majority of people would actually be, would really be benefited by that.
I think I've talked enough and picked your brain enough about UBI. And I have in my notes here, to circle back to a comment that you noted that someone in your group had about education. And you had noted that your group kind of asked this person, you know, what it is about education, like what does this person want more? And I want to pick your brain further on that and understand what you think the kind of the real issue is. Is it that just us, we don't know enough, or we don't know the facts, we know the wrong facts, or we're not looking in the right place? What is it about this issue out in education? Because, you know, not only this person in your group, but honestly, a lot of researchers and scholars are always saying that the public don't understand. The public just doesn't get this or get that, and we should bypass the public and go straight to your representatives or the experts and whatnot. So I'm curious to know what your group was talking about in terms of what type of education are we talking about? Is it the information we're consuming from the media, or is it just things we just don't know?
Yeah. So really a little bit of everything. I think that one thing that we talked about was definitely the media and what information that we're taking in on a daily basis. And really it also circles around into informed decision making. And my opinion kind of on the matter is that I think a lot of problems and issues for anything, really, just because we are biological beings, is I don't know the psychological word for it, but I think it's a cognitive bias, like what is it, confirmation bias. It's kind of like,
yes,
I don't know,
confirmation bias,
you
know,
but
yeah,
you
that's
kind
right.
of get stuck in this own loop where you're used to certain experiences, and kind of what you see, you kind of get dug into certain positions, and then kind of what you expect to see and what you expect to know and what your opinions are, you sort of just kind of get stuck in that. And it kind of goes for both sides, not just politically and everything, but you get really used to what you're used to, and you want things to stay that way. And that affects how you see things, that affects your opinions on things, that affects what you might even consider as fact or as false, just based on your everyday lived experiences and what you're surrounded by. And I figure that, at least in the political climate, when people are in a certain situation or in a certain environment, they kind of get stuck in that loop of, okay, well, I'm surrounded by people who think this, I was raised to think this, I've always thought this, I'm going to continue to think this. And I think that's counterproductive to the ever-changing environment and world that we're living in. And not only that, you know, I just think that, especially now in the, you know, the age of information with social media and television and, you know, phones that have access to the global internet, and that specifically have algorithms to show you things based on what you're already looking at, then you can really get consumed into digesting and being fed the same information that already appeals to your already your opinions that are already seated, and you just keep getting fed the same thing, which just strengthens biases that have already existed.
Tanner, that was so thoughtful and so helpful. I just have one last question about this issue you brought up with about the cycle that we're in. And you noted about algorithms and in the things that whether we use in search history or internet and just algorithms that are kind of helping us, so to speak. And how do you break away from that? Because we all use the internet. We all use social media. How do we not let the algorithm control what we're doing?
I'd say be open-minded and just listen to other people's opinions thoughtfully. That's kind of the reason why, circling back to, I think, the very first question you asked me was, well, why exactly did you even participate in the weekend? And I wanted to kind of hear what other people had to say. I wanted to hear about issues in our society and proposals to fix them. I think that when you kind of just step away just for, you know, once a day, once a week, just step away from what you're used to and find ways to get out of your comfort zone. Just like right now, like I don't consider myself much of a speaker, but I was like, hey, this is something I've never done before, talking to people that I've hardly, you know, ever spoke to before, you know, but let's go for it. Same thing, you know, just take a step away. All right, well, let me, you know, let me listen to someone else's opinion. Let me hear what this person has to say about that. Okay, here's what I saw, and here's what this article that I read has to say. Now let me think about that critically. Let me ask someone who I know might give me a answer, you know, to the contrary on that. Let me hear what they have to say. I think things like that, and there's nothing wrong with it. Whether you agree with it or not, or whether you let it change your stance on anything, I don't think is the important part, but rather at the very least, understanding other viewpoints. Even if we're all stuck in, you know, Facebook algorithms and showing us advertisements based on our search history, there's no getting away from that. But not letting it, you know, subconsciously, you know, can start to control us in a way that sounds really cryptic and, you know, weird. But I think just, you know, just being conscious that those things are happening and just making a conscious effort to learn things that you didn't know before, I think is really important.
You have shared so much with us. Before we close, I'd love to give you the floor. If there's anything you want to share, any impressions you had from the event, any last words you want to share with us?
So I'd finish it off with, I think just at the end of the day, you know, as long as you just keep an open mind and you do the best that you can do in your own way to just take steps forward and not get stuck in place, I think you'll be okay. And I don't think that it's anything that, as long as you're just making a conscious effort to take steps forward, you know, I think you'll be in the best place that you can be. So,
well, Tanner, thank you so much for talking with us. It has been such a pleasure listening to you, hearing about your experience at Shaping Our Future, and just learning about you and how you live life. And I hope that our listeners have walked away with some wonderful nuggets of inspiration from you. Thank you so much, Tanner.
All right. Thank you so much for having me.
From the Center for Deliberative Democracy at Stanford University, the Berggruen Institute, and the Haas Center for Public Service at Stanford University, this has been Voices of Shaping Our Future. If you like our series, be sure to tell your friends to subscribe, and we encourage you to start your own conversations about the very topics we're discussing this season. The Voices of Shaping Our Future podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, and is hosted by me, Alice Hsu. To learn more about me, you can find me on the Center for Deliberative Democracy's website, linked in the show notes. To learn more about the Berggruen Institute or the Haas Center for Public Service at Stanford University, please visit their websites, also linked in the show notes. Voices of Shaping Our Future is produced by Scott Simpson and Amy Locker and edited by Josh Williams. This series is executive produced by the Center for Deliberative Democracy at Stanford University, the Berggruen Institute, the Haas Center for Public Service at Stanford University, and Toby Agency.